It's been 3 days since Donald J. Trump was elected the next president of the United States. And the reaction has ranged from elation to despair to protesting in the streets to pleas for cooperation and collaboration. It was the upset no one saw coming. But that's not quite true, because another View political pundit, Eric LaVille, predicted this very outcome on our show last Friday. He joins us on Another View, along with Roger, Carol, Bill, and Will. I'm Barbara Ham Lee, and the Another View Roundtable is next, right after this news from NPR.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. A very special thank you for your service to our veterans and their families and our active duty military as we salute you all on this Veterans Day. Our Another View roundtable is here. Please welcome Virginian pilot columnist Roger Chesley. You can hear his columns every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. You can read them, not hear them. How are you, Roger?
I am doing fine. I'm taking it one day at a time, Barbara.
And I'm sure we'll be discussing that. NSU professor of political science, Carol Pritlow. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Barbara.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Okay. Community activist Bill Thomas. Bill, lots of people want to hear from you today.
First, I want to wish all our veterans, living the dead and the wounded, the very, very best for their great, great service to the United States of America.
Absolutely. Thank you. Journalist, author, and talk show host Will LaViste. How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate our veterans as well. Always a pleasure to be with you, Barbara.
Thank you so much. And Hampton University professor and political pundit Eric LaVille, author of The LaVille Report. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Barbara. How are you? And again, happy Veterans Day to all the veterans.
Absolutely. So in the wee hours of Wednesday morning, we heard this.
I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard. Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. We have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me.
And much later in the day, we heard this.
I know how disappointed you feel because I feel it too. And so do tens of millions of Americans who invested their hopes and dreams in this effort. This is painful, and it will be for a long time. But I want you to remember this. Our campaign was never about one person or even one election. It was about the country we love and about building an America that's hopeful, inclusive, and big-hearted. We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead.
Since then, there have been protests all over the country. President-elect Trump and President Obama have begun the transition of power, and the Democratic Party is scratching its head and saying, what happened? Hampton University professor and Another View political pundit Eric LaVille predicted this very outcome on our show last week. Here's what he had to say.
I believe because of the effect of voter suppression, those laws that we're going to see start take effect, I believe because the Democratic Party did not pay attention to their base, which are college voters, millennials, I believe, and also African American voters. I believe because they were not able to overcome the negatives of their campaign. I believe that if the numbers stay as they are, which is a statistical dead heat, I believe that Donald Trump will win Ohio, he'll win Florida, he'll win Nevada, and the leaning Republican states that will put him over the 270.
So you believe that if everything stays the way it is today in terms of the statistical heat, that Donald Trump will win?
I do.
So, Eric, did you do the happy dance when your prediction came true, or were you just as stunned as the rest of the country seemed to be?
No, you know, I did not do a happy dance, and I was not stunned because I knew it was going to happen. As a matter of fact, you, Will, my students, my wife, I've actually been talking about Donald Trump being the president for several months now, after he recovered from those final bad 2 weeks. So when I do my analysis, I remove emotion from it. I have my personal beliefs, but I'm a realist. But I'm also an optimist, which means that I'm realistic about my optimism. So you have to look at facts. You have to look at reality. You have to be able to accept that. Also, being a student of history and understanding human behavior, it helps you to better forecast the future and what will take place. So not a happy dance, but, you know, I knew that my analysis was solid. I knew that it was right. And I knew that this was coming.
So why do you think, Will, then there was such a disconnect from other pollsters and those who, you know, do this for a living that claim they had no idea that this was coming?
Because I think, as Eric and I have talked about this, that people did not extract their emotion or extract their own beliefs and what they believe who should be the president. We should remember that way back when it was already anointed to that Hillary Clinton would be the next president. And a lot of people just felt that way. And then you see that playing out in the news media, unfortunately, the industry that I've come up in, that people had that mindset and that belief, and that's where they lean towards. So they're not extracting their emotions. They're not looking at the facts. They're not really doing analysis of what's going on and not in touch with what is happening with the people across the country on the ground. It's very key. I thought it's very interesting what Hillary Clinton said. We have seen that the country is more divided than we thought. Are you kidding me? You thought you didn't realize that this is what's going on in this country? That was very telling. That was a very telling comment.
Bill, I saw you shaking your head as Eric was explaining in the tape from last week the reasonings why he felt Donald Trump was going to win. What's that about?
I've been saying it for 6 months. People are tired. The people, white folks and black folks as well. I saw it on campus. I had more African American people ask me about Donald J. Trump than any Republican. I've been there for 17 years. People can't pay their bills. They can't get their dental done. They can't put their kids in school. They can't send their kids to school. We're talking about creating jobs and opportunities in Afghanistan for those folks and not taking care of Americans. His message was clear. 3 weeks ago, the Hampton University public policy poll said that Donald Trump, it's a snapshot, was leading in Virginia by 3 points. Then we dug down into that to find out, is that right? Because we can't put this out there. This is crazy. It can't be true. It was true. What we found out, and what the Trump organization had already found out, because I called around to find out, people weren't telling the pollsters the truth. So what we did was, what I looked into is ask another question. Who are your neighbors voting for? And then you would get the true answer. And then once we found out that the people weren't saying it, and you got to look at the statistics and polls in Virginia, even Cuccinelli beat McAuliffe in white women in voting. I mean, so it was there. People are just tired. It was a repudiation of the whole system. People don't care who it was. They weren't voting for Donald Trump. They were voting for change. And they didn't care who was changing them. But the African-American community as well. I mean, we're just not doing well. The country's not healthy.
Carol, were you surprised at the number of white women who wound up voting for Donald Trump as opposed to voting for Hillary?
Yeah, I was surprised, but yet I kind of understood it because I would look at the figures and look at the percentages. But then when I would walk around downtown in the mall, when I would talk to people in my condo and just average people, they were, I don't believe in Trump's particular philosophy, but he does have a stake in the game economically. And if we go with the economics, then I'm all in. People are nervous because of their jobs, and that ends all.
But Roger, even though he says economically he may make changes, I don't remember hearing him say he's going to make changes for the little guy. I hear more about, you know, tax cuts for the rich and so forth.
The paradoxes in this election are astounding. A person who had never run for elective office, a person who had not been in the military, a person who offshore jobs, which he claims that he'll bring back. Yeah, it was a cry for change, but is this really the guy that's going to deliver it? And so I think there was this pushback from a lot of media and pollsters because it just didn't seem to fit the narrative that they'd already put out there in their own minds. And the fact that we in the media didn't listen to the depth of desire for change, didn't understand how much race was really an issue in this election. That's on us because we blew that. We blew it.
Donald Trump got the higher amount of black voting for him than any Republican in the last three elections.
But here's my question. Let me ask this question as you expound on that, because when you look at a person who is endorsed by the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, why would a black person think that Donald Trump would be on their side? That's what I'm trying to
because it didn't matter.
Understand the psyche.
It doesn't matter. People are really, really, really concerned about the state of their lives. Michael Moore, even 2 months ago, said that Hillary was going to lose. He looked at one little statistic, and I never got out of my mind either. He said one of the largest items in his expenses for his campaign was baseball hats. They couldn't believe how much Donald Trump's campaign was putting into baseball hats and not all the other media things, because people in Michigan and Ohio and those towns, they wear baseball hats. He was just focused directly on the people who understood. They did thousands of focus groups. He's a businessman. They did different kinds of polling. They did customer polling. And it was just phenomenal when you saw what they were doing and how they were spending their money and how they were putting their people and how he was taking advices. You know, even at the convention where I was a delegate, I said, we have to discuss HBCUs. How can we do that? Let's figure out a way to put a task force together as to how we can fund HBCUs. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Donald Trump said, yes, that's a good idea. They passed it back down. You're in charge. Figure out how we can do things. He was listening.
So are you going to be working with the Trump administration?
I'm a delegate. I was one of only 12 or 13 or 14. Yes, they right? do call me all the time. And we're going to talk about how they can benefit historically black college and universities economically, not through the Department of Education. Universities need money. They need resources, and that's what they talked about. And he listened, and he brought it into a speech when we talked about cancer and what things were going on with cancer. He brought it up. You guys doing a good job there. We need to go forward. So, I mean, and his staff. So all of those things that were really, really pertinent to affecting real change, he was listening to.
But so, Will, then what does Make America Great Again mean from an African-American perspective?
Well, are you asking me to speak for all African Americans?
There you go. There you go.
Are you switching that around?
Oh, you didn't know?
I mean, I'm used to doing it.
You didn't know that that was the purpose of the interview?
I didn't expect that here from you, Barbara. But I think that it means a lot of different things to different people. You personalize it. And I think for African Americans, when you say make America great again, make this system, make this situation work for me and my family better again. I think that's what it meant for a lot of people. They personalized it to whatever their personal individual beliefs were. And I think the issue of race, let's be honest, race is an undercurrent that is always there and ready to be picked at, because we as a society have never effectively and honestly dealt with race. And it exists on both sides. And people, and a lot of African Americans, and a lot of people are shrewd enough to understand that racism is not a monopoly that the Republicans have, nor the Democrats. It exists on both sides. Mm-hmm. So because Donald Trump is more bombastic in how he's talking, and Hillary and others are more subtle, it doesn't mean that the racism is not there on either side. And I would ask you, which would you prefer to deal with? The one who's telling you in your face how they feel about you, or the one who's patting you on the head and stabbing you in the back? Which one? What?
Well, and I'm not going to answer because I am the moderator. No, but you're right. I mean, because that is something that has been said when you talk about people who lived in the South and moved north, for example. Mm. The discussion of I'd rather deal with someone who tells me straight up in my face that I am racist, I don't like you because you're black, as opposed to people who tend to, generalizing in the North, say, yes, you're great, come along, but at the same time they're still stabbing you in the back.
Yeah, and I won't, but you can't get that higher position,
right,
in the company.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, but you,
that's
can,
exactly
you
right.
can sweep up.
Okay, I want to play a clip from Van Jones, who is a political commentator on CNN. Just take a listen to what he had to say about the election.
People have talked about a miracle. I'm hearing about a nightmare. It's hard to be a parent tonight for a lot of us. You tell your kids, don't be a bully. You tell your kids, don't be a bigot. You tell your kids, do your homework and be prepared. And then you have this outcome, and you have people putting children to bed tonight, and they're afraid of breakfast. They're afraid of, how do I explain this to my children? I have Muslim friends who are texting me tonight saying, should I leave the country? I have families of immigrants that are terrified tonight. This was many things. This was a rebellion against the elites. True, it was a complete reinvention of politics and polls, it's true. But it was also something else. We've talked about race. I mean, we've talked about everything but race tonight. We've talked about income, we've talked about class, we've talked about region. We haven't talked about race. This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside. Yeah, when you say, you know, you want to take your country back, you got a lot of people who feel that we're not represented well either. But we don't want to feel that someone has been elected by throwing away some of us to appeal more deeply to others. So this is a deeply painful moment tonight. I know it's not just about race. There's more going on than that. But race is here, too. We got to talk about it.
So is it white lash, Roger?
Oh, definitely. Thank you, Bill, but I want to talk about it. And, you know, that's what drove me to write the column that ran on Thursday. You had somebody who was racist, misogynistic, infantile, and someone who basically said in so many ways, I'm going to make it better for you whites. And you felt left out these last few years, and I'm appealing to you. And blacks, Latinos, Asians, transgender, others, they're going to take a back seat now. And that was, in so many ways, what was repeated for the last 17 to 18 months of this campaign. So there was that. The other reason why I have so much pessimism is we've put somebody in as commander-in-chief. And this goes beyond income levels and race. We put somebody in as commander-in-chief who has shown himself to be someone with a very short fuse, hyperbolic, says he knows more than the generals do, and we've entrusted this person with the keys to the nuclear missiles in this country. Wow. It is astounding to me.
But you know, I find it interesting, Eric, that people will say now, well, that was just rhetoric. That was just talk on the campaign trail. He doesn't really feel that way. Why? Why would they say that?
Sure. But to answer that question fully, I have to comment on what that language was. As I stated last Friday, what he engaged in was basically the Southern strategy. code talk, code language. Make America Great Again is simply a code language for Make America Hate Again. If you notice, there have been so many incidents of children, middle school children, saying build the wall, passing out papers at school, saying deport you, deport you, deport you, and so many things, ugly, hateful things that children normally would not do unless adults give them the ability and the permission to do it through their example. So back to your original question as to how could he do that? Was it just
in other words, I don't understand why people think that it was just rhetoric.
Sure. Well, as it relates to what I believe that the factors of racism is respect, credit, and benefit of the doubt. Donald Trump, by him being a white male and being elitist, he's going to get respect of those, and he's going to get the benefit of doubt of those, and he's going to get credit from those. And it's the same people that demonize President Obama, say he's not my president, and so forth and so on, they're now asking you and saying, well, he's your president, and so forth. And they're saying, we want, the first thing we want him to do is to bring charges on Hillary Clinton and President Obama and put them in jail. That was broadcast on the NPR station and story yesterday. That's what you're hearing throughout the media. That's what's going on college campuses. People are being assaulted because the commander-in-chief, with all this talk about let's not be bullies and so forth, he created this divisiveness. He created this hatred. So,
it's almost like giving permission.
Stop. Yeah, y'all have to stop this. That's not true. That's all anecdotal. It's not true. Nobody's going to try to do anything to President Obama. Nobody's going to try to do things. There's checks and balances.
So
nobody's putting their kids asleep at night worrying about they're going to wake up in the morning. I mean, so the Southern strategy worked in Wisconsin. It worked in Pennsylvania. It worked in Ohio. People are sick and tired of doing the same thing and can't afford to live. We have to figure out another way of doing things.
Okay, hold on a second, because Pam in Suffolk may have a little bit of a different view on this. Hi, Pam.
I'm
you're
sure
on the air.
Does.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was just calling in to reiterate what I think Van Jones, you had played that about how to talk to your children about the results. You know, there was a lot of rhetoric, a lot of just bad things that were said about women and minorities. And, you know, when I found out that President-elect Trump, he had won, the first thing I was thinking is, how do I explain this to my daughter in a way to help her understand what happened? And one other thing I did want to quickly mention was that I served as a polling observer on Election Day, and one thing I noticed was it was not a good turnout. And I sort of thought that was an isolated thing, but, you know, as I watched the coverage, you really just saw that across the board. And one thing I think, you know, African Americans, they don't vote all one way. Everyone has their own opinions. But, you know, I think that everyone needs to respect and honor the right to vote, and everyone should get out there, and everyone should vote. And I didn't see that happen.
Thank you, Pam, for your call. Go ahead, Roger.
You know, the last two elections, obviously, it was a groundswell for the first black president. But and we had written about how certain precincts might have had 4-5 hour waits. I don't think we had that problem in Virginia, at least this year. And that says something about, I think, the lukewarmness a lot of African Americans felt toward Hillary Clinton, that there was not this the groundswell necessarily to push in the same way we had done 4 years ago, 8 years ago.
But how important is it, though, for us, particularly the African-American community, to understand the entire process? Because not voting for the president is one thing, but then when mm-hmm. you do the down ballot races, now we have the Senate, the Congress, and the presidency are all one party.
And you have the largest number of Republicans representing the state houses in the history since 1922 that are now in charge.
So what happens? One of our listeners, his name is Paul Butler, wrote me an email because he was a pollster worked at the polling station in SeaTac. And he said the biggest issue was how unprepared some of the black voters were to vote. He said a vast majority of the voters did not seem to understand the paper ballot. I kept explaining all was needed was that the circle next to the candidate had to be black and dim. Ballots were cast with a circle being marked with an X or a check mark or a circle around the circle, which means that it won't count. It won't count. And his bottom line is, he said, a number of voters asked me who they should vote for. I explained to them, by law, I can't tell you.
CTAC is an African-American community in Virginia Beach.
I know that.
Nobody
no,
else knows.
Okay,
yeah,
all right. Yeah, CTAC is an African-American community in Virginia Beach. It concerns me that we go to the polls, but if we're not voting properly, our voices still aren't being heard, Roger.
One of the things that made me the angriest over the last few days is this notion from people expressed like Colin Kaepernick that, oh, well, I'm not going to vote or it doesn't matter. Are you kidding me?
And he didn't
You
vote.
Know, it is not a perfect system. You don't just vote on election day and then forget about your political responsibilities for the rest of the year. But you have to participate. You have to know what's going on your local level, on your state level, on the federal level. And if you don't participate, then please shut up after the election takes place.
Let me go to Will. So the protests in the street, too little, too late?
Riots. Mm-hmm.
Why do you say riots, Bill?
Because they were burning people. They were burning things.
Burning people?
They were burning, yeah, you know.
Burning things.
I'm a little tired. They were burning things.
Oh, okay.
In Oregon, California. I'm not a star writer. I'm just saying things. Yeah, they were burning. Something was going on other than that. And the point is, I'm going to let Will follow up on it. If those would have been black people out there doing anything close, even marching peacefully, it would have been talked about differently.
Yeah, I think that people are exercising the emotions on this. And from what I've read, some of the protests are actually professional protests, or the particular groups that were already against Trump, and then the movement just kind of because of people's emotions and anger. I don't have a problem with the protests. I think that is good. I'm sure from what I saw, a lot of the people who are out there did actually vote, and they're expressing themselves. I'm also sure there's a lot of people out there who did not or could not vote. But I think it comes down to, across the board, voting was down. Among whites as well, it was down compared to the last two elections, and you had there was more of an even balance of Democrats and Republicans that voted, from what I've seen. Yes. And so what that spells to me is also a flawed candidate and a flawed campaign.
Absolutely.
So this is multifaceted. It's not just it was about a white lash and that's it, as Van was saying. He said it was multifaceted.
It
comes down to a flawed candidate who people were tired of, just like the Republicans rejected Jeb Bush.
Sure
said, get out of here.
Don't even come.
And he was probably the most qualified
the
on
most
that
money.
Side.
With
the most money, but get out of here. And he said the same thing.
One of the things that bothers me is, yes, he's a flawed candidate and he baits and switches. What's to say, once he gets sworn in, that some of the things that he used to bait people, he doesn't change again? I'm just very unsure about him.
Okay, if you're just joining us, we're talking about life in the Donald Trump presidency with the Another View Roundtable pundits, Roger Chesley with the Virginian Pilot, Carol Pretlow with NSU, community activist Bill Thomas, Will Levese, host of The Will Levese Show, and Eric LaVille with Hampton University. Our phones are lit up. So
the world's going to end tomorrow, so they better get the calls in.
I know.
All light's going to be out tomorrow. Everything's going to go. The white people are going to come down from the mountains and get us all. So run.
Bill, you need to stop.
Michael joins us. I'm ready to run right now.
Michael joins us from Norfolk. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. And your panel is one of the liveliest in the country. So glad to have you here in Norfolk.
Thank you.
Let me just say this. There has been many concerns expressed about Donald Trump being on the nuclear button. My question is this. We have, 45 days from the election to when the Electoral College meets. What can we do to influence the Electoral College in these next 6 weeks about our concerns for Mr. Trump's security mindset?
Okay, let's let our panel deal with that. Thank you, Michael, so much for the call. Eric.
Sure. The Electoral College are going to vote the way that the states approved them to vote. So get that, everyone calm down. The Electoral College is not going to blow up. However, it's up to the supporters of Donald Trump and those that voted against him and our members that we represent in Congress to hold him and his administration accountable, period.
Well, and that's my other point, because I hear people say 2020 can't get here soon enough. But what about 2018? What about the midterm elections in terms of Congress?
Well, that's why I actually think that this whole candidacy of Trump is actually, in the long run, good for the nation.
Yeah.
Because it's a wake up call, because people are alert that we are not pulse racial. People are alert that your vote does matter.
I think we figured that out.
All of that. No. 8 years. People didn't figure that out.
Come on, Hillary obviously felt that and took a lot of things for granted. Absolutely. We still have an issue of gender in terms of there's a lot of white women who did not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
On one hand, you can look at that and you can see that a lot of women do not feel necessarily the need for a female president. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of women also saying, yeah, I can see a female president, but not this one. So do we have I think it's a wake up call, and people are alert, and people are, so to your point about keeping them accountable, that is exactly what needs to happen. Trump said he wanted a country where everyone would have an equal opportunity.
Period.
He said that. He said that more often, a lot of times, than Hillary did.
Absolutely.
So therefore, I would say to the Black Caucus,
yes,
all of the individuals who have been lax on the job, now you have an opportunity to make him accountable for that.
Because
he said that.
One thing, Barbara. I was an elector in 2000. That's not going to change. It's a process. It's very, very regimented, and it's just not going to change. Yeah. So,
the other thing I would say about this, I would be against something like that, because that would lead to anarchy if he were not elected by electoral college. That's crazy. Let's not even talk about that.
Let's see. John joins us from Fort Eustis. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes. I really do enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I listen every time I possibly can. I am a white male. I'm in the military also, but the one thing that I understand is we all have something called thinking traps.
Called a thinking cap? Is that what you said?
Thinking traps.
Okay.
Every single one of us has biases, and we all do. But the one thing that I see as what is called white privilege is really the fact that I truly do spend 99% of my day never even considering race as an option of how I view my fellow human beings. I wish we all had the experience of the military where the one thing you had to consider is the person next to you. Can I trust them? Can I be reliant on them and their performance? And I think all of us are in our own echo chambers right now. And we're talking past each other instead of to each other. A lot of this election was not about race. It was truly about 1,000 different other issues.
Thank you.
It really was not about race for the vast majority of this country. Mike Rowe wrote an amazing article today trying to explain that. And if you can compare this election to trying to lick a cat, you're a genius. I say everyone read that article.
Okay, John,
Nobody is saying the horrible things Trump said is what they wanted, but we only get two options.
Right.
Maybe it's time for a viable third party. Thank you very much, and I love your show.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate
that.
I wasn't cutting him off. I wanted to give the panel a chance to respond, and we only have a finite amount of time, Bill. Go ahead.
Two things. One,
Roger.
It's very true that we as a nation do not have enough shared experiences. And you can say what you want about forced conscription into the military, but at least that made us have to bump up against each other in a way that we just don't do now. And secondly, I don't want to discount what the caller just said, but what do you think would have been the difference in the total outcome of the race if Hillary Clinton had said some of the comments that Donald Trump did, if Hillary Clinton had not been a Secretary of State or a U.S. Senator, I don't think it would have been anywhere near a close race. So a close result. So think about that. Think of if the situation had been reversed.
Just one quick thing. Where was Al
Bill
Sharpton?
And then Will.
Where was Al Sharpton? Where was Jesse Jackson? Where was Oprah Winfrey? Where was our people that
Jesse Jackson was out there on the campaign trail?
No, not like they normally are.
They're not young like anymore.
Nowhere near close to it. And then where are our younger millennials who are writing in Hennessy, the name of the ape that got killed, and all these kinds of things? Where, I mean, people just weren't in the right mindset. Mr. Donald J. Trump is an American. He believes in America. He's a businessman. He believes in fair opportunities. And some of you guys, just are so misled by impressions and anecdotal information that you're not even giving the man a chance. And Roger, I'm going to tell him the first thing he should do is build a wall.
If he wants to do that, go ahead. I don't think he's going to spend the money. But talk about people being led by impressions. What do you think about the voters who backed him as a populist? He's the furthest thing from the populist that you could create.
Of course, because we're all deplorable. We're all deplorable. So, of course,
that will
we're stupid.
I'm not calling you deplorable.
We're stupid.
That's
we're racist. We're homophobic. All the white folks getting ready to march down from the hill to Tennessee to take us over. So that's how you see it.
Bill. Can I just have
this?
Wait a minute.
Spend 17 to 18 months telling me one thing, and then you say we should all be united later, I'm going to listen to what you've been telling me 17 to 18 months, not election night.
You know, what is that adage? If somebody tells you what they really feel, believe them. Go ahead.
And that's
ahead,
exactly what I was going to say. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, when Donald Trump stood up and talked to or at the black community and doesn't address us specifically and coming into our communities, does that say about how he feels about us? Now, he might bait and switch later, but still, that angered me, and it's very hard.
Go ahead, Carol.
It's very hard for me to see him as concerned about the black community when he does speak at us and not to us, and is very derogatory when he talks about us.
Okay. You know, it's like herding cats in here. Stop. Go ahead. Will. I'm trying to keep him under control.
I love my sister Carol, how many Democrats have come into the black community in church and spoken at the black community?
Thank you.
How many times has that happened? What happened when Hillary was running against Barack?
Yes.
And the things that were said.
About,
how many times?
Yes, sir.
People don't remember that. The bottom line is, if Hillary had gotten out her own voters, I said on this show before, elections are about getting out your own voters.
Absolutely.
If Hillary gets her own voters out, we're having a totally different conversation here.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Let's go to Adam in Virginia Beach. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, we should all remember that for the first 68 years of this man's life, Donald Trump was essentially a New York liberal. During his campaign, he said and done a lot of things. And, you know, he's essentially, just with his concession, with his acceptance speech, practically done a 180. He's had a gracious speech that calmed the markets. He's already started walking back his comments about the wall. So I think, like Hillary Clinton has said, maybe it's time to have an open mind and see what's going to happen from now on.
Okay, thank you, Adam, for your call. What do you think about that, Eric?
He's exactly right. 99%, and I talked about this this week in my classes, 99% of what Donald Trump stated he can't do, because the presidency is the weakest office of the three branches of the government, okay? They were sold a bill of goods. The vote for Donald Trump was not just, it wasn't for him. It was against President Obama. It was against Hillary Clinton. The people, I mean, he hasn't released a plan anytime during his election. The only two things that they will do is submit for nomination and approve one of the most conservative judges for the U.S. Supreme Court. The second thing that they would do,
which means that Roe v. Wade is going to be on the line.
Well, everything's on the line. Everything's on the line. And in addition to that, they're going to peel back parts of the Affordable Care Act and replace it with something that's even worse because it's going to be more expensive. They're going to remove the mandate upon the individuals. They're going to remove the tax penalty and also on the businesses and place that burden on taxpayers, similar to what President Bush, the Republicans, did during his administration with the prescription drug bill. That was a horrible, horrible bill.
But aren't you guys concerned? Let's go back to the Supreme Court for a minute, because placing someone, this conservative, on the Supreme Court, and it could be more than one, depending on because mm-hmm. of the age of the justices that are there and so forth. So it might be two. Yeah. Our children, I mean, that's who's going to be affected by this from because of whatever laws that are made going forward. Aren't you concerned about that, Carol?
Yes, I'm very concerned about the Supreme Court appointments. And what makes me even more concerned is that here you're going to have a Senate that is Republican, and they're going to probably confirm whoever he appoints. And that feels like a no-win situation.
Roger.
I'm just under the opinion that it's going to be, for the bulk of people of color, it's not going to be good. But more than that, I really, almost superseding that to me, is just the whole national security concerns. If for me, if you have somebody who almost acts like a child in terms of tweeting people that he feels have criticized him, is that really the person you want in that office?
I think that that's, again, Roger, respect you and all of that. That's a typical news media thing. Trump is an opportunist. Trump is a businessman. He's 70 years old, and he did not achieve this by just being a fool and being childish. This guy understands what he's doing, and he tapped into this Southern strategy. He doesn't believe in the Southern strategy. He doesn't have all his ideology about race and all that. His thing is about winning. Power, respect, win. He tapped into those things that was going to get him a win. Now he's in a position, and now you got to figure out, how am I going to do this? And he might, a dear friend of mine told me, he might get bored and say, after 2 years, and say, you know what? I think I'm going to do something else. This is not what I thought it was.
It's a lot of work.
I'm hearing his wife is like, do I really want to move in there? I'd rather keep my life as it is. He does. It's not that deep. He doesn't have all that ideology.
As you look at the people whose names are being put forth as cabinet members, does it cause you concern, Eric?
Very much so, especially for the attorney general. Also, if you look at the other individuals, Rudy Giuliani. And Rudy Giuliani has a terrible track record when it comes to civil rights of individuals. And you can go all the way back to
Brooklyn
Windows.
They talked about Stop and Frisk.
Going to bring back Stop and Frisk. But basically, keep in mind, as I stated before, in the election reviews several months ago, this is 1964-65 over again. He is a candidate of law and order. The police forces are going to get the green light to do whatever they need to do in order to keep what they feel is law and order in their communities.
Well, and you know what that, who does that affect?
Well, that affects poor people of color.
But the people still rule. The people will be alert and awake.
Yeah.
The people still rule.
Absolutely.
That's the best shining scenario thing that has come out of this. There's no, people are not asleep. There's no more Novocaine. We had eight years of Novocaine, getting your teeth pulled with Novocaine. The Novocaine is gone. You're getting your tooth pulled. No Novocaine.
I never heard it put that way.
That's
America.
It.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Bill.
America is great.
That's Malcolm X.
America is great. Yes. America is a great country. Donald J. Trump, for most of his life, was one of the callers calling. Was a Democrat at risk. So that's where his true feelings are. And all this stuff and all these names are being called. And all this fear mongering. And all we have to do is go vote. That's all we have to do. Votes matter. And we didn't vote. And we're getting our behinds kicked because we didn't. But all of this, the world is in it. All these black people going, Roe v. Wade is going to be this and that and the other. And there's some elements of that I think we need to look into. I mean, we need to open our eyes up, expand our options, go vote, do what we need to do. Everything's going to be okay.
Carol. Okay, so we take your advice and we do all that. It's too late now for that. So now what? We got him. Now what?
Hold him accountable.
Hold him accountable.
Hold okay. all of your all of elected officials accountable. Hold them all accountable.
And that's
you can no longer sit in this position and just enrich yourself and not at least bring something back to the people. That's what you were sent there for, so do what you were sent there for.
Okay. Yeah. Let's let Roger have a say.
I know you were just using that as an allusion about Novocaine to get your teeth pulled, but
true.
I'm worried about the bullets that are being used by police officers to shoot us dead, and that we've seen so many instances of this, often in questionable circumstances. So that's one. And the second thing that, you know, I go back to the national security issue. We keep on hearing reports about Russia's influence in this election and how much they collaborated with the Trump campaign in this. And again, put that on the other side. Say what if Hillary Clinton had done something like that? Do you think that vote would have been as close?
Robert, that's not true. It is not true. No one has proven any Russian connection to the doggone election. Nobody has.
Well, I will tell you this, Bill. When just watching the news coverage, it made me a little nervous watching all the Russians clapping and going, hey,
what made you
going crazy. It made me nervous to watch them support him in that way.
Who would support him? Barbara, I don't understand what you're saying. Who?
Maybe they were
I was talking about the they did a shot of people in Russia reacting to the news Donald Trump had won. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, and to that point, there are credible reports that show that the Trump camp was in communication with the Kremlin during the time of the campaign. But Roger mentioned something about Russia. I've said this before. Vladimir Putin is the smartest and the most strategic ruler that we have in this world. He's a former head of the KGB. He has caused Russia to be his own. And he's the wealthiest ruler. He's worked over $40 billion. Make no mistake about it. Vladimir Putin sees Russia opportunity to be the new empire, the strong, the big dog again. And by electing Donald Trump, he believes that he has someone that he can work with in order to allow his agenda to take back over the Baltics, which is northeast Europe, and the Balkans, which is southern Europe, Serbia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Crimea, and northeast Russia, Europe, which is Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. And keep in mind that he also has a reliable collaboration with China and Iran as it relates to the Middle East policy. If you go back and look at history, look at where World War I was started, look at what Russia has to gain, and look at how NATO supports those areas, and we support them as well, I believe, again, by 2019, we're going to be in a full-fledged world war.
And you said that last week.
Now we're going to have a war. You know, we're going to have a war. The world's going to end. Vladimir Putin is running Donald Trump. None of this has been proven. None of this has been. And if
he
it
said
was
it was
true,
speculation.
If it was true speculation, then it's not worth talking about.
It's
but
analysis.
My question is,
analysis.
Then why,
right.
then why is
analysis.
Our
analysis?
Why is our military in Norfolk being strangled to death? Ask Admiral Harvey. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the resources, we don't have money. We have the fewest ships. Our soldiers and women and men.
Well, according to our president-elect, said he's going to change that.
Yeah. And
he's
so,
going to make our military
strong
again.
So let's talk about
again.
That. Let's make our military strong again so the Russians can beat us.
Roger.
I'm just going to say, anytime Russia is happy by the person who's elected and NATO is worried by the people who the person who was elected, I think that's a problem.
Tell NATO to pay its bills.
Okay, so 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in this discussion. Just say one thing that people need to pay attention to in terms of staying involved in the political process. Roger.
Vote. And know what you're voting for and know what you're voting against.
Carol? I agree with Roger, and vote at every single level, not just the federal level, but think state and local as well.
Get off your behind and go vote and shut your mouth if you don't.
Okay.
All politics is local.
There you
pay
go.
Attention to what's going on locally and your congressman.
Amen.
Get involved, understand the public policy, hold everyone accountable, and be a part of this great country because America is great and will continue to be.
America is great. Okay. And we've got less than a minute, and I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the Portsmouth election and some other things, so we'll have to do that next month.
Because
we did have some local elections.
66% turnout of registered voters in Portsmouth.
What percent black?
I don't know what the black, I don't know the breakdown, 66%.
People voted in Portsmouth.
I know white folks
did. And overwhelmingly kicked out, and overwhelmingly black and white kicked out the current mayor.
Well, the white folks in Portsmouth, I'm sure.
So, change they could believe in.
There you go.
You're crazy.
Make Portsmouth great again.
But, you know, I am curious about what's going to happen with the makeup in the city of Portsmouth going forward.
They're going to do the same thing that was done to them. I mean, it's payback time.
Go ahead, Roger.
I think you have, and you know, I'm coming out with a column about that election tomorrow, but mm-hmm. I think you have a lot of people involved in the process of a lot of different ages, and I think that's good. Now, some people would say whites are overly involved in it. No, they're participating. Absolutely. It's up to everybody who decides to be involved to get involved. But I do think you're seeing different coalitions thinking about, we want white, black, brown. We want Portsmouth to do better. How can we get that to happen?
Quick question,
and I
Brian,
think that's a good thing.
Senator okay. Louise Lucas involved in the role campaign?
I don't know if she was involved, but I know Senator Lucas's daughter, you know, it's now on council.
It's now on council, absolutely. And with that, guys, we got to move on. I am so sorry. A program note on our sister station, WHRO-TV, Dr. Henry Louis Gates brings us a four-hour series called Black America Since MLK and Still I Rise. It's a deeply personal journey through the last 50 years of African-American history, from the victories of the Civil Rights Movement to today, asking profound questions about the state of Black America and our nation as a whole. Let's take a listen.
Imagine if Martin Luther King woke up and he asked you, what's happened since I've been gone? What would you say? That is the conceit of the series. The last 50 years of African-American history. For the black community since 1968, it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. A huge segment of the black community has risen.
Black folks are more a part of society, like literally are coming out of the shadows.
It's a novel kind of development in Black America. It looks as if a certain gate has opened and there's a wider number of us who are now operating in arenas where we had not previously been admitted.
But on the other hand, the percentage of black children living at or beneath the poverty line is basically the same as it was the day Martin Luther King died. We all know about the political uproar, the furor, that's raging in many parts of the country over inner city violence, over police relationships. I want white America and black America to listen to black people talking to each other about what their lives mean and what these events signify. I want Americans to realize that we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go.
And that is Black America Since MLK and Still I Rise. Part one happens this coming Tuesday, November the 15th at 9 on WHRO TV 15. So be sure to tune in. And that's it for this edition of Another View. If you'd like to hear this show again or share it with a friend, please visit our website, anotherviewradio.org, and download the podcast. We're on Facebook, so like us, and I'm on Twitter at Barbara Ham Lee. Next week on Another View, we'll examine the state of black films and black filmmakers and discover why it is so difficult for a black film to become Oscar worthy. And we are basing this on what has been happening with Nate Parker's film, The Birth of a Nation. It was supposed to have been a very large Oscar worthy film. And unfortunately, the box office is just falling and it's not moving. And there are a lot of different theories behind why that's happening. So we'll take a great look at that next week. So be sure to join us. Our theme music was composed and performed by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Victor Bowen is our audio engineer. And thanks so much, Nicholas Thomas, for answering our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Happy Veterans Day, everyone. And want to say a special hello to Mary Alice Beal and also to Mr. Leonard Parsons. They both came in to watch the show today. So we appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. And let's get together again next Friday at noon for Another View.